Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling a really pressing issue for many right here in Wisconsin, how we're going to care for our aging population. Mm-hmm. We've got a detailed document to unpack. It's the Long-Term Care Insurance Partnership Training.
Right.
Think of this as getting you up to speed fast on what the future of long-term care looks like in our state.
Yeah, our goal here is to, you know, pull out the most important pieces from this training. We want to understand the challenges Wisconsin faces, explore some potential solutions, and maybe highlight a few things you might not expect.
And why should you, the listener, tune in?
Because this isn't just policy wonk stuff. I mean, it's about the security and well-being of individuals, families, really the fabric of our communities as demographics shift. So yeah, let's dive in.
Okay, let's start with the big picture. Where are we seeing the biggest changes in long-term care?
Well, the document really highlights this significant shift, a rebalancing, as they call it.
Rebalancing.
Yeah, moving away from sort of the traditional reliance on nursing homes and institutions towards helping people stay in their own homes and communities for as long as possible.
That makes sense. I think most people would prefer that.
Absolutely. It's driven by two main things. Consumer preference people want that comfort, that familiarity. And there's also the potential for cost savings.
Right. Community care can sometimes be, well, more efficient.
It can often be tailored more economically than a one-size-fits-all institutional setting, but it's not all smooth sailing.
Okay. So what are the bumps in the road?
Well, even with progress in expanding those home and community options, we're facing some pretty major challenges. The biggest is just the sheer increase in the number of people needing care.
The aging population we mentioned.
Exactly. And that growing demand is hitting a real shortage of available caregivers. It's a workforce crisis, frankly. Oh. And that puts significant financial strain on the state and on families, too. So, yeah, the direction is towards home care, but getting there smoothly, that's proving tough.
Okay, so demand is rising sharply. Can we put some numbers on that? Just how big is this demographic shift in Wisconsin?
The numbers are, well, they're quite striking. Between 2015 and 2040, the number of Wisconsin residents aged 65 and older projected to jump by 72%.
72%, wow.
Yeah, from about 777,000 to over 1.3 million. But here's the really critical part.
Okay.
The population aged 85 and older, that's the group most likely to need significant long-term care, is expected to nearly double.
Double.
Almost double, from around 118,000 to 231,000 in that same time frame. This isn't just, you know, a few more people needing help. It's fundamentally reshaping things.
That's staggering. What's driving that surge specifically in the 85-plus group?
It's really a perfect storm demographic-wise. You've got the baby boomers hitting those older ages now.
Right.
People are living longer thanks to medical advances. And birth rates have been lower. So the proportion of older folks in the population just keeps growing.
And does this look the same across the whole state?
No, actually. That's another key point. Rural areas are often aging faster than urban centers.
Ah, creating different local challenges for accessing care, I imagine.
Precisely. Distance, fewer providers. It's tougher in some rural spots.
So with this coming wave, what does it mean for the actual number of people needing formal long-term care services?
Right now, the document says it's around 120,000 people in Wisconsin getting formal care.
Okay.
Based on those projections, that number is likely heading towards 175,000, maybe even 200,000 by 2040.
And that's just the formal system.
Exactly. We can't forget the sort of hidden system, the unpaid family caregivers. There are about 580,000 of them in Wisconsin.
1 million people.
Doing work valued at around $7 billion a year, according to the document. But that informal network, it's under incredible strain. The pool of potential family caregivers is shrinking relative to the need.
That really paints a picture of the scale, doesn't it? More need, eventually fewer family members to help.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's shift slightly. What about the health of this aging population? Does living longer mean needing care for longer?
That's a really important question. There's this concept called compression of morbidity.
Meaning maybe disability comes later in life?
Right. The hope is that the period of disability is compressed towards the very end of a longer life. But the data, at least in Wisconsin, suggests it's more complex than that.
Okay, so it's not that straightforward.
Not entirely. We are seeing good trends like less smoking, better heart disease treatments. that might delay or reduce some needs.
Good.
But we also see rising obesity rates, more diabetes, even among younger groups now.
Which will impact them as they age.
Exactly. And things like early onset dementia seem to be growing too, leading to potentially very long periods of needing care.
So the takeaway is people are living longer, but maybe with more chronic conditions.
It seems likely that the need for care will increase significantly, even with longer lifespans, because of these persistent chronic conditions.
Okay, so navigating the system now must be complex. What programs are currently in place?
Wisconsin does have a network. The document mentions things like family care.
That's a managed care approach, right?
Correct. Then there's IRS Include, Respect, iSelfDirect. That gives people more control over their services, about 20,000 participants currently.
Self-directed, okay.
And there's also a partnership program, different from the insurance one we'll get to, that integrates Medicare and Medicaid for about 5,000 dual eligibles. Different models for different needs.
But you mentioned challenges earlier. What are the big difficulties within these existing systems?
Oh, definitely. A critical one is the workforce shortage we touched on.
Right, the caregiver.
The document cites vacancy rates of 20 to 25% in direct care jobs, especially home care.
20 to 25%. That makes it hard to actually get the services, even if you qualify.
Absolutely. It's a huge bottleneck. And it's driven by demographics, fewer working age people relative to seniors, plus issues around compensation limits, competition from retail or fast food, training limitations, and those rural access problems again.
And the cost.
Yeah.
What about the financial side for individuals? Do these programs cover everything?
That's the other major hurdle. Long-term care can be incredibly expensive, potentially catastrophic, really.
And standard health insurance doesn't cover it long-term?
Generally, no. Medicare coverage is very limited, mostly short-term skilled nursing after a hospital stay, not ongoing custodial care.
So that leaves Medicaid.
Medicaid does cover long-term care, but you have to meet very strict income and, crucially, asset limits. You essentially have to spend down almost everything first.
What about veterans' benefits?
They can help eligible veterans, but it's often supplementary, not a complete solution for everyone's long-term care costs. So relying just on these public programs, it can leave huge gaps. People end up paying out of pocket until their savings are gone.
Which could be devastating for a family.
Absolutely.
Okay, so given those gaps and challenges, that brings us squarely to this Wisconsin Long-Term Care Insurance Partnership Program. It sounds like it's meant to be a solution. Let's unpack this. What's the core idea?
Well, what's really interesting here is how it tries to bridge that gap. It connects private long-term care insurance with the public safety net, Medicaid, but in a way that provides asset protection.
Asset protection.
How? The basic idea is to encourage people to plan ahead and buy private long-term care insurance policies that meet certain state and federal standards, these partnership-qualified policies.
Right.
Then, if someone with one of these policies uses up their private insurance benefits and still needs care and has to apply for Medicaid,
yes,
they get to protect a certain amount of their personal assets above and beyond the usual very low Medicaid limits.
So you don't have to become completely impoverished to get help.
Essentially, yes. It operates on a dollar-for-dollar basis.
Meaning?
For every dollar your qualified partnership policy pays out in benefits for your care,
uh-huh,
you get to protect $1 of your assets from the Medicaid spend-down requirement.
Okay, that's pretty clear. Dollar paid out, dollar protected.
Exactly. And this is really important that protection extends even after you pass away. It shields those protected assets from Medicaid estate recovery.
Estate recovery. That's when the state tries to recoup costs from your estate.
Correct. The state can make a claim against assets like your house or savings after you die to recover what Medicaid spent on your long-term care. But assets protected by the partnership policy are exempt from that.
Can you give us a quick example? Make it concrete?
Sure. Let's say you have a partnership policy and it pays out, say, $300,000 in total benefits over the years for your nursing home or home care needs.
Okay.
If you then need to apply for Medicaid because you need care beyond what the policy covered, you would be allowed to keep $300,000 in assets, savings, investments, whatever that would normally have to be spent down before Medicaid would kick in. And that $300,000 would also be saved from estate recovery later.
That sounds incredibly valuable, especially for people with, say, moderate savings they want to protect.
Precisely. That's one of the key target groups.
So who benefits from this program? What are the advantages?
It's designed to have broad benefits. For consumers, obviously, it's enhanced financial security, protecting assets, offering maybe more affordable protection than trying to buy unlimited private coverage.
Makes sense.
For the state budget, the idea is it delays or prevents people from needing Medicaid, saving public funds.
Okay.
It also helps stabilize the long-term care insurance market by setting quality standards for these policies. Insurers get an expanded market because this asset protection feature makes the policies more attractive.
Addresses a key consumer worry.
Exactly. And for the healthcare system overall, it helps create a more balanced mix of payment sources for providers, not just relying so heavily on Medicaid.
Sounds like a potential win-win-win. How popular is it? How many people in Wisconsin actually have these policies?
Well, it's seen steady growth, but it's still, you know, a relatively modest part of the overall market. The document says there are about 27,000 active partnership policies in Wisconsin.
And how does that compare to all long-term care insurance policies?
That's roughly 18% of all the long-term care insurance policies in the state. So significant, but not the majority.
Why isn't it higher, do you think? What are the barriers to more people using it?
Several things, probably. Just general lack of awareness is a big one. Many people simply don't know the program exists or how it works.
Right.
The long-term care insurance market itself has faced challenges, you know, with premium increases and fewer companies offering policies over the years. That affects partnership policies, too.
Right.
And there are, frankly, educational gaps. Understanding exactly how the private insurance coordinates with Medicaid, the asset protection rules, it can seem complex. Insurance professionals need specific training to explain it well.
Speaking of rules, the document mentions specific laws and regulations. What's the legal underpinning here?
Yeah, it's built on a solid framework. In Wisconsin, the main authorization is Wisconsin Statute Section 49.4531. That sets up the basic structure.
Okay.
Then the detailed rules for the policies themselves, what insurers have to do, are in the Wisconsin Administrative Code, specifically INS 3.465.
It's in 3.465.
And things like how Medicaid actually applies the asset disregard are in the state's Medicaid Eligibility Handbook. Federally, the foundation was laid by the Deficit Reduction Act, or DRA, back in 2005. That set national standards and allowed for reciprocity between states.
And did Wisconsin just adopt the federal minimums, or did they add anything specific?
No, Wisconsin actually went beyond the federal minimums in some key areas to strengthen consumer protections.
Oh. Like what?
They implemented enhanced, more specific training requirements for insurance agents selling these policies.
Yeah.
And they strengthened the suitability standards, the rules designed to make sure the policy is appropriate for the person buying it, considering their income, assets, and needs, plus some extra state filing requirements for the policies.
So what are the state's main goals with this program? What are they trying to achieve?
Primarily, it's about encouraging people to plan ahead and take personal responsibility, delaying their potential need for Medicaid.
Okay, shifting some costs.
Right, creating a more balanced cost sharing between private insurance and public funds. It's also really focused on providing better financial protection for those middle-income households, the ones with moderate assets.
The group you mentioned earlier.
Exactly. And ultimately, it helps ensure that limited public Medicaid dollars are directed towards those with the greatest need and fewest resources.
It really does sound like a unique approach. Can you summarize its core value proposition? What makes it stand out?
I'd say it's a few things. One, it offers this extended protection range, private insurance first, then Medicaid coordination as a backstop. Two, it's got that dual benefit, money for care, plus the dollar-for-dollar asset protection.
Right, the two pieces.
Three, it allows flexibility. You can choose different coverage levels. It aims for right-sized coverage, making it potentially more affordable than unlimited plans. And four, crucially, that legacy protection shielding assets from estate recovery.
Okay, let's dig into the asset protection calculation again. You said dollar for dollar?
Yes. Straightforward calculation. Total assets protected equals the total benefits paid by the qualified partnership policy for qualified long-term care services.
And what kinds of payments from the policy actually count towards that total? Is it just the daily nursing home rate?
It includes payments for a range of qualified services. So yes, direct care costs, per diem amounts, even cash benefits if the policy pays them out while you're eligible for care.
Okay.
Also, payments for care coordination services if the policy covers them, and benefits used for approved alternative care, like maybe modifying your home.
What doesn't count then?
Things like premiums that were waived while you were getting benefits, any return of premium features some policies might have, cash surrender values, death benefits. Those don't count towards the asset protection amount. It's really focused on dollars paid for care.
Got it. What if a couple buys a policy together, sharing the benefits? How does the protection work then?
Ah, good question. With shared benefit policies, the usage and the resulting asset protection are tracked individually for each person.
So even if they draw from a common pool?
Right. The amount of protection person A gets is based only on the benefits paid out for person A's care. Same for person B. It keeps their potential Medicaid eligibility separate based on their own usage.
And inflation protection is usually built into these policies, right?
Yeah.
How does that affect the asset protection? Does only the original amount count?
No, and that's another key benefit. When the policy includes inflation protection, the benefit amounts grow over time.
To keep up with rising costs.
Exactly. And when those higher inflated benefit amounts are paid out for care, the full inflated amount counts towards your dollar-for-dollar asset protection.
So inflation protection not only helps cover future costs, but also boosts your potential asset protection.
That's right. It scales up together.
Makes sense. It sounds like keeping meticulous records is absolutely vital for this to work when you eventually need it.
Oh, absolutely crucial. You need to keep the policy itself, of course, and any riders or documents proving its partnership qualified. And all the explanation of benefit statements or payment records from the insurance company showing what was paid, when, and for what service.
Like a running tally.
Exactly. And then the key document at the end, usually when benefits are exhausted, is the Wisconsin Partnership Program Verification Form. It's Form F01566.
F01566.
Yes. That's the official form confirming the total benefits paid that qualify for asset protection. It's what you'd submit with your Medicaid application.
Okay, so you have this form. You've used up your benefits. You're applying for Medicaid. How do you actually choose which assets get protected? Do you just tell them, protect my house?
You, the policyholder, get to designate which of your countable assets you want protected up to that total dollar amount from the verification form.
Countable assets, meaning things Medicaid would normally look at.
Correct. Things like savings accounts, stocks, bonds, sometimes certain types of property beyond your primary home, depending on circumstances. You generally make this designation during the Medicaid application process.
And you have flexibility what you choose.
Yes, within limits. The assets must belong to you. Or your spouse in some cases, and they have to be assets that Medicaid would otherwise count. You can't protect assets that are already exempt under normal Medicaid rules.
Are there, like, smart strategies for deciding which assets to protect?
There definitely are things to consider. You might want to diversify, protect a mix of liquid assets like cash and less liquid ones like real estate.
Okay.
Think about emotional attachment protecting the family home might be a top priority. Consider income generation, maybe protect an asset that provides some income.
Ah, though you mentioned the income might still count later.
We'll get to that, yes. Yeah. Also, think about ease of management. Protecting complex investments might be harder to deal with later.
What about tricky situations, like assets owned jointly with a child or a small business interest?
Yeah, those need careful planning. For assets owned jointly with someone other than a spouse, usually only your share can be protected. Business interests involve valuation issues, ownership structure. It's best to get professional advice for those.
Definitely sounds like it. So once you've designated assets, say your $300,000 savings account is protected and you're approved for Medicaid, what happens with that account going forward? Can you just spend it? Does the interest count?
This is important. While the principal amount of the protected asset, $300,000 in your example, is shielded from being counted for eligibility or spend down,
right.
Any income generated by that asset, interest, dividends, rent, whatever, is generally still counted as income under Medicaid rules.
Ah, okay. So the income might have to go towards your cost of care.
Yes. Once you're on Medicaid, there are rules about how much income you can keep for personal needs, and the rest often goes towards your care costs. So the protected asset itself is safe, but its income stream is usually still factored in, requires ongoing management and record keeping.
Got it. So the protection is primarily for the asset principal itself, preserving it long term.
Yeah.
Which leads perfectly into the estate recovery aspect again. You mentioned partnership protects against that.
Yes. Let's quickly recap Wisconsin's estate recovery program. The state has the authority to seek reimbursement from the estates of deceased Medicaid recipients, generally those aged 55 or older when they received services.
For certain long-term care costs paid by Medicaid.
Correct. Things like nursing facility care, home and community-based waiver services, related hospital and drug costs. There are some exemptions, like acute care outside of LTC, services before 55, etc.
So how exactly does the partnership protection block this?
It's quite direct. Any assets that were designated as protected during the Medicaid eligibility process because of the partnership policy benefits paid remain permanently exempt from claims by the Medicaid Estate Recovery Program after the person dies.
So that $300,000 savings account from the example is safe from the state trying to recoup costs from it after death.
Exactly. It's preserved for the person's heirs, free from that specific Medicaid claim. It's a major advantage for legacy planning.
What documentation is needed to prove this exemption to the estate recovery unit after someone passes?
Similar documents as before, really. Proof the policy was partnership qualified, the verification of benefits paid, that F01566, records showing which assets were designated as protected during the Medicaid application, proof of ownership, and the Medicaid eligibility records.
So keeping everything organized is key, not just for getting on Medicaid, but for protecting the estate later.
Absolutely. And communicating with family and making sure the executor or person handling the estate knows about the partnership policy and the protected assets is vital to ensure that exemption is properly claimed.
It really sounds like a comprehensive protection then. During life for eligibility and after death for the estate.
That's really the crux of it. The Wisconsin Partnership Program offers this coordinated strategy, private insurance first, Medicaid as a safety net, but with this powerful asset protection that lasts a lifetime and beyond through the estate recovery exemption.
Those seem like the real aha moments, the dollar for dollar protection and the fact it shields assets even from estate recovery.
I think so. Those are the unique selling points, the core value that differentiates it.
Okay. This has been incredibly informative. If someone listening wants to learn more about the Wisconsin Long-Term Care Insurance Partnership Program, where should they go?
The best starting point is probably the Wisconsin Department of Health Services website. They should have detailed information online.
The DHS website. Got it.
But I'd also strongly recommend talking to professionals. Speak with an insurance agent who is specifically trained and certified to sell partnership policies in Wisconsin.
Specialized knowledge is key.
Definitely. And also consult with an elder law attorney. They can provide personalized advice based on your specific financial situation, your assets, your family structure, and your overall long-term care planning goals. It's not just about the insurance. It's about how it fits into your bigger picture.
Excellent advice. So wrapping up, we've seen the demographic wave coming, the challenges in the current system, and how this partnership program offers a unique public-private approach. It really makes you wonder, as these demographic pressures continue to mount, are innovative partnerships like this the future? What other creative, collaborative solutions might we need to develop to ensure both financial security and access to quality long-term care for everyone down the road? It certainly leaves you with something to think about.
It really does. A critical issue for all of us. Thanks for the discussion.
Thank you.